Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I want to welcome our guest today. His name is Peter Burke, and he is with the Farnham Center. Peter, you are the marketing director, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So tell me a little bit about what the Farnham Center is, what it does. Tell me a little about its mission. Tell me a little about it in general.
Sure. Well, the Farnham Center operates substance use disorder facilities in New England under the Easter Seals umbrella. We're a program of Easter Seals. Our programs are comprehensive. Our facilities provide very comprehensive services. They are located in New Hampshire, although we are not restricted to providing treatment to New Hampshire residents. Certainly, we're seeing more and more people from Maine, Massachusetts, the surrounding states, in addition, of course, to people that we're serving from New Hampshire. Our facilities are located in both Manchester, New Hampshire, and also in Franklin, New Hampshire.
What is the mission?
Well, I think the mission is really to help people return to a life of semblance of normalcy. Really, as you, I'm sure, know, no community or really sector of the community is really immune from the opioid and other drug crisis that we've witnessed the last several years. It certainly has hit very major proportions in terms of its intensity and its impact across the board geographically and just within different sectors across the board in our region. The comprehensive nature of our services, I think, enables people to come to us at different stages of the situation. I'll tell you, I'll back up a little bit and give you a sense of some of the specific programs we have, and then you can kind of fit things in a little better. In Manchester, I mentioned we're in Manchester there. We're in two different locations. In one, we have a medical detox unit with 27 beds. We just upped that bed count to 27. In the same facility, we have a residential facility for both men and women, separate wings, just under 40 beds there. And then we also, about a year ago, added to that same facility a new 16-bed stabilization unit. That particular unit works pretty closely with what is called the Safe Station Program in Manchester that's operated by the Manchester Fire Department. There's been a fair amount of publicity about that program. It's been in existence for about 3 years. And in that time, I'd say about 5,000 people have walked in the doors of the various fire stations in Manchester seeking help relating to substance use disorder. They can walk into any fire station 24/7. And many of those people get referred over to our stabilization unit. Not all, but, you know, quite a few. And that rounds out that one facility in terms of what we are doing there. And then across town, on the other side of Manchester, we have an outpatient services and program building. We moved all our outpatient programs there about a year ago. And we offer really a wide array of outpatient programs, ranging from intensive outpatient programs, partial hospitalization programs. We have a very robust Suboxone clinic there. We actually also offer something ourselves called open access. The way that works, it's not 24/7 like the fire department, but Monday through Friday, roughly from 8 to 1, if somebody walks in the door at our outpatient building, they will at least be given an initial clinical assessment, which, you know, sometimes can be enough to get the ball rolling for somebody. The window of opportunity for people seeking help is tiny. And if someone has made the effort to actually walk in the door that day, we try to get a thorough assessment done to determine the level of treatment that might be appropriate, and then hopefully get the ball rolling from there. And then just rounding things out geographically to kind of put things in context, I'll tell you, in Franklin, New Hampshire, we have two other residential facilities in Franklin, which is a relatively short drive, maybe 35 minutes north of Manchester, rather beautiful location where we are up there, chock full of history. We have a woman's residential facility up there called Ray House with 21 beds, and then across the country road, a separate facility for men called Webster Place with 42 beds. And we do have a few outpatient programs up there as well. That's what Farnham consists of. And as I say, we're seeing people from every corner, certainly of New Hampshire and beyond.
Our guest today is Peter Burke. He is the marketing director for Farnham, which is Recovery Starts Here. We're talking about addiction and the challenges with that at the workplace. You know, as I look on your website, it talks a little bit not only about the mission, but it talks about the philosophy. And the philosophy is known as health realization, and also known, of course, as the three principles. Can you give me an overview of, you know, this philosophy and how it helps people realize, you know, how they're internally developing and where they have issues and how they can overcome things and adversity?
Sure. And I must say the success story is really heartwarming. Health realization, three principles is the approach we use. And the gist of it, really kind of just boiling it down, is that people have an inner resilience, but they probably need help tapping that. And we try to get them to kind of focus on that, kind of shedding away all this outside noise, outside distraction, and make it easier for them to get into their innate health, which we all have, just kind of gets lost in the chaos that sometimes is going on in someone's mind and life if they're caught up in substance use disorder. So it really just kind of enables them to tap into that resilience that's there. We teach people that they're not broken. They just really need some help in reaching into that resilience and utilizing it. And it's really kind of a simple process. But I'll tell you, I occasionally will be at events, perhaps, you know, it could be a wellness event, a health expo or something along that line, where we might have a Farnham table. And very often people will come up to me and say, gee, I went through Farnham, or my brother went through Farnham or something along that line. It helped them out. It helped me out. But they'll very often bring up the three principles and say, oh, I loved it. It really helped me, which I always find interesting because I'm not really, it's unsolicited. I'm not even bringing it up in conversation with them. So I think it does have some lasting impact and is helpful in people that are kind of on this journey, trying to work their way through, you know, what's been behind their problems for however long it might be, you know?
No, I understand. And this is always a tough conversation, right? This is always it's personal, it's emotional, it's a big issue here in the United States and in the Northeast. And, you know, substance abuse and detoxing from these issues not only affect work, which is what we're going to be talking about in the next segment, but they start at home too, right? I mean, there is a real destabilization at home and within families, and it affects work. It affects everything, doesn't it?
Yes, it's really pervasive. The impact really runs across the board. Whether it's the workplace, family life, it's just really no community or really no part of someone's life really is immune from what's going on these days. The impact on families is tremendous. The number of grandparents, for instance, who are now raising their grandchildren is staggering. And that's because that in-between generation, the parents of the little children and the children of the grandparents, might well be experiencing substance use disorder issues and are not capable of really raising those little kids. And so many grandparents have been pressed into duty to kind of do it a second time with their grandchildren. And I've seen some of the stats. I don't recall precisely, but even within New Hampshire, thousands of people that are grandparents are in this role now. So, you know, it's happening everywhere. And I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about, oh, the stigma is gone, but it really is not gone. I think we've been successful at chipping away at it, but there's still certainly stigma attached to substance use disorder. And sometimes what goes along with that is a reluctance to talk about it, sometimes a reluctance to seek help. I think things are getting better that way, but I think we still have a long way to go, and the consequences are just so wide-ranging, as you say, family, business, really every aspect of life.
No, they really do, and you know, as we're going to be talking about our, you know, the work life, or an area that, you know, funds pretty much how people survive, and how they, you know, make ends meet, and how they feel involved in their community and involved with their family. Do you see that this need, based upon the current opioid issue, is growing at a exponential rate? What are you seeing in terms of the needs there in New Hampshire and across, you know, the Northeast and country?
Well, I think the need is growing. There have been reports of a certain leveling off. For instance, the number of overdose deaths. I know in New Hampshire, for instance, in the last each of the last 2 years, there were close to 500 deaths each year in New Hampshire due to overdose deaths. Now, there may be a little bit of a leveling off on that figure, but part of that, of course, might be due to the availability of Narcan, and so that sometimes people who may go into overdose are helped by somebody who happens to be able to administer Narcan and bring them out of it. So that could be a little bit misleading, but you know, I use the analogy sometimes, it's almost like putting your finger in the dike to stop the flood. You do it in one spot, but then something else, or a new drug, a new combination of things pops up somewhere else, and then you've got to deal with that situation. So I think the need certainly is still on the upswing, and I think we're trying to do a good job getting our arms around it, and I think we're succeeding in some ways, certainly, but it's far from over.
Oh, no, there's no question. It's absolutely a continuing challenge in terms of understanding the need and desire to make it, you know, to make it better. You know, from the Narcan perspective, you know, has Easter Seals or the, you know, the Farnham Center, does it have a stance on Narcan?
Well, I mean, we're certainly in favor of its use. I mean, we maintain some on our premises. I mean, it's gotten to the point really now where even public health officials are distributing it. They're offering training sessions on how to use Narcan. Certainly a lot of the law enforcement and fire department people carry it. And, you know, it saves people's lives. I know it can be challenging sometimes for the first responders. You know, they're not without some impact in this whole situation themselves, seeing people at their worst, really, and trying to help bring them back. But, you know, Narcan is effective, relatively simple to use, and I think it's kind of an important weapon in dealing what we're dealing with at the moment.
We're talking with Peter Burke. He is the marketing director for Farm Center. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Peter Burke, Marketing Director for the Farnham Center. You can go to Farnham Center at FARNUMCENTER.org. We're talking about certainly the issue of substance abuse. And as you know, Peter, that the workplace is no safe haven from this problem. What are you seeing that employers are asking you, talking about when it comes to how they're dealing with this issue at the workplace?
Well, you're certainly right. It's no safe haven. The crisis is so pervasive, it certainly encompasses the workforce. I saw a stat recently that said that 70% of people suffering from substance use disorder are employed. So certainly active members in the workforce are involved as well. What we're starting to hear more and more directly from companies and talking to businesses, employers, which is a good thing, certainly. Some of them have now been contacting us just maybe because something as simple as they want to increase the number of resources that they offer to their employees, where they might find help or they can find help for family members. Occasionally, companies will ask if some of our clinical people could come in and maybe speak with their managers just to give them an overview of the current situation and sort of what's the landscape when it comes to treatment services that might be available. The impact certainly is dramatic on the workforce with that figure of 70% of people suffering from SUD being employed. Certainly, it's got to be. It creates situations that employers have to deal with, which is absenteeism, certainly, sick leave, the accompanying health care costs, I suppose workman comp claims. So in the course of a year, it equates to quite a bit of money per employee that is sort of siphoned off that way. So there's a lot at stake, and it has a direct impact on companies' bottom lines. So I certainly think that's behind much of the communication we're now having directly with the companies. And sometimes it might be through the HR department. Some of those people are charged with organizing programs to help combat this within the workforce, or to at least provide valuable resources for people to turn to. I think I had an employer say to me recently that he said he had a wake-up moment when he suddenly realized someone told him, oh, you know that guy that does such a great job on the third shift on that piece of equipment? Well, he's in long-term recovery. He said, wow, I had no idea. So, I mean, a lot of the people who are working for companies are in recovery, some very successfully in recovery, but the impact on families certainly has an impact in that workforce as well. Employees who may have a family member who's experiencing substance use disorder, you know, certainly if nothing else will be distracted. I mean, there takes an emotional toll, financial toll. So it's something that it's great that businesses are certainly waking up to the fact that it's the reality of the day, and they're trying to pitch in to help. In New Hampshire, Governor Sununu had initiated something called the Recovery Friendly Workplace Initiative last year. And that program, while I'm not really on the staff of the Recovery Friendly Initiative, it's a program that's really designed to not only increase the awareness of the pervasive nature of substance use disorder and how it impacts the workforce, but also to really address the culture of companies where perhaps there hasn't been quite the not only awareness but sensitivity to the fact that people are going through this and the whole host of issues that go along with it. So I know the workplace initiative folks are signing up companies. Our chief operating officer, Cheryl Wilkie, has been involved from the start on the advisory board, and they're doing good things. It's really kind of heightening the sensitivity and knowledge about what's going on, which is a win-win, really, because it's certainly helping people who are going through it, and it really will have a positive impact on the company's bottom lines long-term.
Our guest today is Peter Burke. He is the marketing director for Farnam, which is Recovery Starts Here. We're talking about addiction and the challenges with that at the workplace. There's no question that this issue continues to be one that is being raised in awareness, and organizations are dealing with this daily in terms of how that works. When an organization has an issue or concern or sees an employee or has an employee that is dealing with this, tell me a little bit about the process of how they would go about partnering with the Farnam Center to have that dialogue or have that conversation of moving that forward.
Well, in terms of just having some collaboration, what I'm having happen these days really is companies reaching out directly, and I'm making an effort to reach out to them as well. And just, if nothing else, to let them know we're out there, give them a sense of what some of our programs consist of. Everyone is now on this learning curve and finding out a lot more about what's going on and how it has some direct impact on their arena. We can sit down and map something out. As I say, it could be something as simple as just basic information, because I find in my work, and I spend a fair amount of time engaging with the medical community, business and industry, government, really across the board, I find there's just a dire need for even basic information. I think people will frequently say, you know, there aren't enough treatment facilities or programs out there, and that's probably true to an extent, but they very often don't even know about some of the programs and facilities that do exist. So I think even just basic information, arming the businesses or the HR people, the professionals, with more basic information about what's out there that they can tap into is valuable. And then taking it another step, sometimes we can, as I say, go in and perhaps one of our clinical people can just speak with the managers at the company just to try to plot out some sort of system of communication or educational seminars or things along that line that will just enlarge the scope of information that's out there, and just it'll equip people with dealing with it better within the context of the workplace. It's evolving, because I think everybody is now much more aware of what's going on. So we're starting to see a lot more communication along this line, and I'm sure we will, you know, in the years going forward.
No, I think it's true. I think that certainly that this awareness is the key, right? Is that people are dealing with it. You know, there is a concern or stigma that sometimes people have when they're dealing with work. They're afraid they might lose their job. They're afraid they might, affect their income. How does the Farnam Center work with employers to have that conversation when, to minimize that risk?
I think just the fact that we are now starting to have some of those conversations is a major step in the right direction, because just by increasing awareness of the situation and everything that it encompasses, it's really educating those employers, those businesses, about what's happening right in their, right under their noses, in a sense, that maybe they've been aware of, maybe they've been in a little bit of denial. It's starting to hit home because, as I say, no community really is immune from what's going on. I think years ago, people thought you could almost kind of go by zip code to determine whether someone might be prone to substance use disorder. But, you know, guess what? That doesn't work any longer. It certainly doesn't really know any boundaries, geographic or otherwise. Affluent towns, different areas certainly are experiencing it. So it's all kind of contributing to this wake-up moment, I think. And it's great that businesses are jumping on board. I suppose in a way it really involves changing the culture at some companies. But long-term, it's certainly, as I say, a win-win, not just for the employees and their families, but for the businesses themselves. It can be tricky at first, but I think just the recognition that, you know, there has been a stigma, there still is some stigma. Let's take some steps to be more transparent about things, so that we don't perpetuate the stigma, which is sort of compounds the problem in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the questions, right, is that how do we get this to a long-term solution rather than a short? It almost seems reactionary today, and maybe I'm just generalizing a little, but because of the crisis, we've absolutely had to react. But where does the Farnham Center come down, or East Hills come down, in regards to the long-term solution for these problems?
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of it is has been reactionary. It's had to be, I guess. I think the work we do in just educating people, all sectors within the community, is really aimed toward the long-term solution. The more people are armed with information and knowledge, they're going to go about it in a way that's going to be more effective in trying to eliminate what's going on. It's challenging, of course, and it's challenging for people going through it. But we see some wonderful success stories. It's a challenge. It's daunting. You always say people will sometimes take two steps forward and then a couple back in their own personal experience. But we do see enough success stories to know that what we're doing certainly is working and helping people. But I think it's just that awareness and education piece can't be understated. It's really very important. I gave a talk with our clinical director at a large medical institution 2 years ago, I guess, and to their emergency leadership team, very bright doctors and nurses, of course. Very nice gathering. We gave the talk. They thanked us on the way out, and one of the people said to me, to be honest with you, she said, this was great information because, to be honest with you, we have absolutely no idea of what resources there are out there, where to send people. She said that she thought they did a very good job of dealing with what walked in the door from a medical standpoint. But beyond that, she said, we don't really know what to do or where to send people. Now, that was 2 years ago. I think things have even gotten better in that short time, but I remember thinking to myself, I appreciated her honesty, but it made me think, because that was a pretty sophisticated medical institution, not in the middle of Podunk, and if they're thinking that way, geez, there's a need for education across the board, even within the medical field, and I think a lot of that is improved, even in that two-year time span. I think it'll continue to improve. We try to be proactive in getting out there and participating in that educational process, not with a big heavy-handed sales pitch for Farnham, but just here's the context of what's going on. There are programs out there. We're certainly one of them, a leading one, but, you know, just trying to help people broaden that information base to have something to go by.
Yeah, you know, I think that's true, right? I think that there's a... there's an evolution here that is happening. I think awareness has certainly been rocked. People have not expected it to be such a prevalence, and in all sets and sides of society. And I think the employers have been dealing with this, and initially were, hey, you know, we can't tolerate, we're just going to eliminate, but have realized today in the market that there is today with the employment being so low that it's much more helpful if we can simply work with an organization and work through the problem. I mean, am I saying exactly what you're thinking?
Yes, I think you are. And the reality is that many members of management at different companies now have had this experience in their own families. I can't tell you how often I'll be speaking with someone, whether it's at a company or maybe a medical practice or whatever it might be, and, you know, we're having an interesting conversation, exchanging information, and then they'll turn to me and say, well, actually, we've been going through this with my son, or my nephew had substance use disorder issues or something along that line. It's just, you know, it's really hitting home. So for a variety of reasons, people are becoming more aware of it. One, for good reasons, I guess, this education process, but then obviously the sometimes sad circumstances of a more personal involvement. So, and that's where I see sometimes the stigma being chipped away a little bit. People are opening up a little bit more about this, and the more they do, the more useful that's going to be toward the end game, really, trying to eliminate things and kind of get this under control.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And we're talking with Peter Burke. He's with the Farnham Center in Manchester, New Hampshire, and we're talking about addiction at work. You know, I got to tell you, one of the things that you have really spoken about is the fact of the need to change ideas and thoughts. And the real question is how people can identify this, because one of the things that I've been challenged on sometimes by employers is how do we deal with this? How do we know? Especially since HR is afraid at times, managers are afraid at times to ask questions. And so I saw on your website, it says 5 signs and symptoms of addiction. Talk to us a little bit about it. I'll read the 5 so the audience knows. It says, below are 5 signs and symptoms of addiction you may see at your home, or we could say even at work. 1, pens being taken apart. 2, burnt pieces of tin foil. 3, receipts from purchases going missing. 4, gifts you have given and then disappearing. And then 5, missing important events. So, Peter, tell me a little bit about that. Tell how employers can keep these in mind or others that may be effective.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a range that you've referred to there. Sometimes it's just, some of them relate just to the mechanics of how people might actually take drugs or administer drugs if they've got a substance use disorder issue. Some of the other ones can be more subtle or more difficult to pick up on as well. The receipts missing, gifts that suddenly aren't around, you know, people have this need to finance their addiction, and we get very creative and bold to come up with the money really to keep that going. So, you know, those are some basic signs, but certainly even within a family, again, I'm not a clinician, but people will talk about changes in behavior, a new set of friends, someone withdrawing from normal social circles, things of that sort, acting very distracted, just certainly out of sorts. And it's not always easy to pick up on these signs, but I think as people learn more about this, their radar will be a little bit more finely tuned to maybe spot something along those lines when it's happening. Certainly absenteeism in the work in the workforce, you know, the unusual absenteeism certainly might be a red flag, you know, where it's really kind of unexplained or the explanations don't make a lot of sense. You know, erratic behavior, work performance and behavior that's just not in keeping with the person's past history or normal way of conducting themselves. Things like that just could be cause for concern and at least, you know, certainly worth thinking about or looking into somewhat to get to the bottom of what might be going on.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, right? Sometimes you see these warning signs, if you want to say, and how they handle it. So can you give me an example? I think this would be helpful for the audience of where a company reached out, you know, a person or maybe a couple people, depending on the circumstance, entered the program, they successfully went through the program, and are now, if you want to call it, back at work and succeeding.
Yeah, I mean, there are many examples, really. We've just many instances where maybe the first contact was from a company or someone associated with a company where they've been aware of a situation, maybe encouraged the employee to seek help because certainly they can't really push them through the door exactly. But there have been many, many situations where people have come in both at different parts of our the continuum of care that we offer. We've had people who've been referred to our detox, who've come from the workplace in need of detox and gone through that portion of our program and then stayed with us for residential. And sometimes what people will do if they go through our residential program, sometimes they'll then step down to one of our outpatient programs, perhaps one of our IOPs, intensive outpatient programs. We try to have very flexible times of those programs. Some of them are in the evening, so maybe somebody's gone back to work. They're able to both accommodate their work schedule and keeping in contact, in touch with a counseling component. The other thing I should mention is so many, we've had people who've gone through our program at one phase or another, done well, gotten their lives back on track, and now they are very successful people, whether it's in industry or something else, but even some of them have now been felt such gratitude that they're now working in the treatment and recovery field. Some people have gone back to school, gotten degrees, gotten licensing. Maybe they've become licensed alcohol and drug counselors. So many people working in the field are in long-term recovery, and which is really wonderful because it brings with it a certain sense of empathy for what people are going through and just the knowledge of what's involved, how challenging it can be. Every week or so, we have a graduation ceremony. People get through the program, and it's kind of a heartwarming thing to witness. And so many of the people, those success stories I've mentioned, have now, I was speaking to a woman over the weekend. I think her son had experienced substance use disorders when he was gainfully employed somewhere. She and members of her family, I think working with the people at the company where he worked, got her son into treatment. And in his case, it's worked out very well. He now is an entrepreneur in his own right, has a business in New Hampshire, doing well and employing people were in recovery themselves. So the success stories and the examples are almost too numerous to enumerate. It's great. It's what keeps us going, really.
Our guest today is Peter Burke. He is the marketing director for Farnham, which is Recovery Starts Here. We're talking about addiction and the challenges with that at the workplace. There's no question that the success stories are what make it all worthwhile, right? And I'm sure as the director of marketing at Farnham, you have seen so many success stories. What is the, you know, if you could do one thing to really get to the audience, the importance of connecting with your type of organization to make a difference on this, what is the one thing you want to make sure they hear?
It's just such an important thing to do on different levels. The human level, you've got good people working for your companies who may be going through this. You have people whose family members are going through this. Just from the human perspective, if you can help somebody in that regard, it's a wonderful thing. And then, you know, if you want to then take it over and look at it just from the business perspective, there's a direct impact on your bottom line. So whether you approach it from a truly altruistic perspective or the, you know, also the reality of the day-to-day business performance context, you know, it's a win-win, no matter how you look at it that way. So it's, you know, very important. And again, nobody really is immune from what's been happening. No particular community, no particular industry. So why not be proactive? It may be happening already, but let's do what we can to make it, put it in the past.
And that is the goal. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsandME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsandME.com. That's JobsandME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we've been having a great conversation. We're speaking with Peter Burke. He's the marketing director for Farnham, and we're talking about the Farnham Center. If you're not familiar with it, it's in Manchester, New Hampshire, and all across the New Hampshire market. Peter, where exactly is the Farnham Center located?
In Manchester, we are one of our facilities that is at 140 Queen City Avenue. That's where we have our medical detox, our residential, and our stabilization unit. The outpatient program building is at 700 Lake Avenue, which is over near the Maine Elliott Hospital. And then again, we're up in Franklin with Ray House for Women, 21 beds, and Webster Place for Men, 42. We're on something called Holy Cross Road in Franklin. The Webster Place facility that we have for men up there once upon a time was a convent for retired nuns, so I think that's probably the reason for the Holy Cross Road name. But interestingly, before that, going way back in history, it was an orphanage, originally an orphanage for kids that became orphans as a result of the Civil War. So it's kind of a fascinating history up there. We have about 15 acres. The architecture of Webster Place is beautiful. It's a peaceful place, very serene up there. It's very nice.
So if people want to connect with the Farnham Center, do you have a social media presence?
We do indeed. We have a very vibrant Facebook page. We are on LinkedIn, Twitter. We have a very active social media presence. Certainly the website that you referenced, farnhamcenter.org, is very informative. People can sometimes use that as an initial look at Farnham and get quite a bit of information there, and certainly they can follow up and get a hold of us for more details. But, yeah, we're very much involved in the social media landscape.
You know, people are more familiar with Easter Seals than probably the Farnham Center. Because obviously it's a national organization. It gets a lot of great press in regards to its what it does. Tell me about the connection between the two organizations.
Well, yes, you're right. I mean, Easter Seals is one of those household names that's been around for a long, long time, very large national nonprofit, doing wonderful work for many, many years. We are officially part of Easter Seals in New Hampshire, which in and of itself does a lot of great work. They administer about 90 different programs. And Easter Seals of New Hampshire also has oversight over Easter Seals in Maine. And I know they have a very active office in Portland. And then they have oversight over Easter Seals in Vermont as well. So it's wonderful being connected with Easter Seals. The general feeling or mission of Easter Seals really helping people. Coming up this month, we have our annual Spirit of Hope fundraising dinner, where they raise quite a bit of money that evening. But the wonderful thing about it, and it kind of ties in, I think, with probably the Easter Seals mission, is that all that money is earmarked for scholarship funding, for helping people go through our programs where they might not have the financial wherewithal. And so it's just another reason why it's nice, very nice being part of the Easter Seals family.
No, there's no question. It sounds like a great partnership in regards to what you do. You know, as we wrap up the show today, as we go into the last few minutes here, how long have you been at the Farnham Center?
A little over 3 years, actually. My background had been in marketing and public relations. I, for about 8 or 9 years, had my own marketing and PR practice and joined Farnham just over 3 years ago, and have enjoyed every moment of it, really.
What's been the biggest thing that you have seen there that has really made an impact or difference for you?
Well, you know, having worked in different arenas, both in-house and for PR and marketing firms over the years, I've really enjoyed being directly involved in an organization that's really committed to doing good work and trying to help people. It could, you know, almost sound like a cliche, but it isn't. And there are examples that I see on such a regular basis of where, you know, it sounds corny, but where we try to do, or Farnham tries to do, the right thing for people and really try to help them. So, you know, it's been kind of a refreshing change of pace from the more corporate arena that I had been part of. Over the years, the work I was doing was getting more and more healthcare oriented. So when this opportunity presented itself, I thought, gee, it might be a good fit based on my experience and skills and whatnot. And so I think it's worked out well in that regard, but it's really worked out well. When I can say I love my work, I actually do.
You also have a podcast, don't you?
Intermittently, we have some of the folks on staff do a podcast, sometimes touching on the three principles. And I think if someone was interested in that, they went to our website, they'd find some links over to the podcast information.
And that'd be Farnum Center, Center.org. And yes, you'll find it under the Looking Within, the Farnham podcast area. I think that's certainly an area that people who get podcasts are very popular now, and I think that that's a great area that somebody could be there. Somebody wanted to contact you or make a donation. Obviously, they can go online, but how can they reach out?
Well, one number that they can use certainly is the 1-888-840-4243. Certainly, they can get a lot of information on the website, and then there's some links over. They can communicate with us from the website also. And even if someone had a random question, they could feel free to email me. I suppose that's fine with me. It's P. Burke, B-U-R-K-E, at EasterSealsNH.org.
Do you accept volunteers?
We do accept volunteers to the extent that we can accommodate them. We don't have unlimited space, so we certainly try to work things out. We're also working with some of the academic institutions that are interested in collaborating a little bit, where some of their students in relevant areas might be able to come in from time to time and either do an internship or perhaps shadow one of our clinicians. So we certainly try to do what we can in that regard.
No, there's no question. I also know that based on your online profile that you also have some open positions, and certainly want to have a shout out that if people are interested, they can go to farnhamcenter.org/careers, and there are some positions available there. You know, Peter, we've had a great conversation today talking about Farnham Recovering Starts Here, an organization that in conjunction with Easter Seals does some great work here. We've been talking with Peter Burke. He's the marketing director. And I got to tell you, I want to thank you so much for taking the opportunity today to spend the time with us, to share this for organizations, for companies out there, for individuals that are dealing with this difficult and yet at times challenging situation.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Doug Currier from VeralDana. Did you know that even if your employee handbook states that an employment is at will, it may not be? Promises made to employees about job security might create a legal liability if the employee is let go, especially if the employee reasonably relies on the promise made. For example, if an employee who has another job offer is persuaded to stay with the company with promises that their job is secure, that employee might have a claim for promissory estoppel, a variation of a fraud claim. So be careful when making promises to employees. You may not be able to hide behind the employment at will doctrine. For more information about this or any other labor and employment law topic, please contact a member of Veral and Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.